This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Where are you right now, Richard?
I'm in the airport Sheraton in lovely Baltimore, Maryland. Their ESPN radio here is actually good.
Ladies and gentlemen, brew yourself a glass of cider. I'm Kent Garrison.
I'm Brian Gill.
And I'm Richard Barta.
And this is Mad
About Movies.
Da, 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 da.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world got
crazy. Are
you
seriously?
It's showtime.
Mad About Movies is an hour-long conversation concerning all things cinema. The first half of the show, we discuss movie news, movie rumors, and movie rumblings, and we talk about what's currently piquing our interest in the world of Hollywood. For the second half of the show, we go over our chosen movie of the week, and we give you guys our review. And as an added bonus, please stay tuned to the end of each episode for our weekly recommends, in which we suggest something you guys need to check out as soon as you can. This week, we are focusing our efforts on what, Brian?
This week, we will be... I couldn't even get through it. this week, we will be discussing the masterpiece that is Now You See Me.
Ladies and gentlemen,
for our final trick,
we are going to rob a bank.
On the count of three, you will be teleported through space and time to your bank in Paris.
One,
two, three.
Yes, masterpiece. It's a piece of something. that's for sure. But man... If you're a fan of Mad About Movies podcast, you know how excited we are to talk about this one. Richard and I have seen it. Brian just saw it today, and his thoughts are fresh, so we will be sure to break it down as best as we can. That is for sure. But I do want to mention, right off the top of the bat, just a little bit of good news for the podcast. Our new website is up, and it is running.
Sweet.
All of our archived episodes are now available via madaboutmoviespodcast.com. So just go there, check it out. All our episodes are available for free for download, unlimited downloads. Send them to your friends, pirate them, throw them on the internet, do whatever you want with them. That's and right. You can go on there and check out and find our Twitter names and email the show and learn more about how the podcast started and all that good stuff. So from now on, the home of this podcast is madaboutmoviespodcast.com.
Beautiful.
So let's get things kicked off here with a little bit of movie news. I have a lot of stuff to talk about in movie news, so I'll save mine, and I want to ask you guys. First of all, Brian, do you have anything you want to mention for movie news?
Yeah, I jotted down a couple of things. I actually did a little homework this week for once.
Awesome.
I didn't bring nothing to the table like normal. We discussed last week, kind of in our movie news segment, we had a little Will Smith / After Earth talk. And we basically said he will take any movie that comes his way that's guaranteed to make money. And then this week he came out and maybe he heard the podcast. Maybe he heard us bashing on him. Maybe he just wanted to tune into Fast and Furious talk, which why wouldn't he?
Right.
But he came out this week, Will Smith did, and said he is not interested in doing Men in Black 4.
Really? So,
yeah.
Wow.
So maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel for Will Smith fans like myself that want to see him get back to stuff that's decent. Not that Men in Black 3 was bad, but just that it's not something that's up to – so the fourth one certainly would not be something that's up to his level of ability. So
Right. Maybe
that's a good start. Maybe we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah. Totally agree. That's actually really good news. You wouldn't think that not having Will Smith involved in your movie would be good news, but I think this is really an opportunity for whoever the studio is. I don't what studio is does Men in Black? Is it Paramount or?
It's Sony,
I'm not sure. Isn't it Sony?
Maybe Sony.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good opportunity for them to kind of reboot the franchise. You know what I mean? It's like how much longer could
Sony.
They go with the Tommy Lee Jones Will Smith combo? You know what I mean?
Sure.
So that's exciting. Who is Richard? Who would you like to see in Men in Black?
Well, I would have to go with the original casting choices and go just Schwimmer and Matthew Perry, David Schwimmer and Matthew Perry.
Yeah.
Just like that's how it was originally casted, and I think that's, you know, what I want to see. No, I don't know. Oh, God.
They're both on top of their game right now, so.
They are. They're peaking. It's like watching LeBron. I would say, I don't know, man. I mean, you got to go Gosling, right? He'd be fun in that role.
Yeah.
In the Will Smith kind of role. And then as the old guy. Oh, here we go. I want to see Ryan Reynolds and Jeff Bridges. Oh, wait, they are making that movie as RIPD?
Okay. I was literally just about to say, I would love to see that. Ryan Reynolds in Men in Black, but unfortunately they're already doing RIPD, yeah, which is basically the exact same thing. So I think he has that that comedic timing, though, that you would need in that, you know, kind of a physical actor. I don't know. It's interesting. I think, man, that's exciting news for sure. And that's really is an opportunity for them to kind of freshen up, you know, the franchise. I liked what they had done in Men in Black 3. Definitely felt, didn't feel contrived, you know what I mean? It didn't feel like they were just making it just to make Men in Black 3. It felt like part of the series. It felt natural. It really went off well. Maybe they'll bring, who knows, Josh Brolin back. I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to that.
Yeah, that was a really good part of that whole. That third one had much better story than you would expect a third movie in a series that comes out, you know, 10 years after the original to have. So
yeah,
that was a cool. I agree, I'm with you, but I don't necessarily need a fourth Men in Black in my life, and I certainly don't need Will Smith to continue to make them. If you know,
totally.
Hey, Brian. A bit of breaking news for you, because we don't only just cover movies, we cover all ends of culture. There is a new Josh Hurt music video, Forever My Lover.
Oh, no.
Just uploaded. Just came out in the last minute or two. So Josh Hurt's Forever My Lover. Check it out.
Who is Josh Hurt? Fill me in.
Hey, Kent, get on board. Be a blockhead for life. Come on.
Okay.
He is an artist that Brian and I were lucky to see at a talent show several years ago, and he's interesting. He's the next R&B superstar, Kent. So just get on board.
I am on board now, guys. Thanks for filling me in. Yeah.
Get on YouTube and find the video for Midnight Racer. That'll change your whole perspective on music.
Midnight Racer, Josh Hurt, is that his name?
Yeah.
Hurt.
Yep.
So
write that down right now.
Yeah, we'll link that.
And then imagine us watching it live with Steven. You can get the full experience. Yeah.
That's great. Would you guys be opposed to a woman in black, maybe? Maybe do a man woman combo?
All.
You know what
that's
I'm
a
saying?
Good idea.
Yeah.
I feel like they've been trying to do that with every Men in Black movie. You know, especially the first one at the very end, it's kind of Will Smith and the lady. I don't know what her name was, who was in the original one.
Dogma Girl.
Linda. Yeah.
Linda.
Dogma. But I feel like they've been trying to do that forever, but they just haven't done it. So, yeah, now is the time to reboot it, get some fresh faces in there, get it going, and liven up that franchise a little bit because it has potential, I think, for great movies. Richard, anything you want to mention for movie news?
I don't. I've been traveling kind of nuts. I've been kind of out of the loop.
Totally.
We should note that this is the first Mad About Movies with the three of us in three separate time zones as we broadcast. Yeah,
that's true.
It's got to be a new podcast.
I'm still in the UK right now. Richard is in Maryland. And yes, Brian, sir. You're back home, back in good old DFW, Texas.
That's right.
Holding it down. Right. How are things going in Texas right now, Brian?
It's starting to get hot, so you know it's about to be that time of year.
Right.
But hey, other than that, can't complain. Gotta love Texas. So.
Exactly.
How's the UK, Kent?
UK is great. It's actually been very sunny over here. It's been about 70 degrees every day for the past 4 days, so it's very rare for that to happen, and it's been great. And I have been learning a lot about movies, and I'll mention a movie later in Weekly Recommends that we've been talking about. So it's been a good experience so far.
Awesome.
Can't complain. Something I want to mention for movie news that pertains to the United Kingdom. Bond 24 is starting to come together.
And if you're a fan of the show, you know how much of a fan we were, us three, of Skyfall.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we can rest assured, guys, a little bit, because Sam Mendes is coming back for the next Bond.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
he is. I
just jumped out of my seat.
Yeah, the there were a couple rumors going around a few weeks ago. I meant to mention it in movie news that there was rumors going around that Christopher Nolan was actually in talks to do the next Bond movie following his current movie Interstellar, which he's filming right now. I guess that didn't work out, but I would have loved to see a Christopher Nolan Bond movie. I think all of us would have not been opposed to that at all.
Totally.
But having said that, Sam Mendes is back. The franchise is in good hands once again. And do you guys think that he can top Skyfall, Brian?
I don't know that he can top it, because I said in our review of Skyfall, our Skyfall podcast, I said I think it's the best Bond movie of all time. So I don't know that you can necessarily top it, but I'm certainly more interested in a James Bond movie with Sam Mendes as the director than I am in moving it on to somebody else. You know what I mean? I love what he did. Obviously, like I said, the best one of the series of the franchise. He left it in such a place that I'm honestly more excited about the direction of the James Bond franchise than I've ever been before. So him coming back for the 24th movie, and I'd seen possibly the 25th movie as well, is a boon for that franchise for sure.
Yeah, Richard, thoughts on Sam Mendes coming back?
Greatness. I'm probably a bigger fan of his other work even more than you two, and then I obviously love Skyfall just like you guys did. And no, I'm very, very psyched. That's great news. That's huge news. So.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. I'm processing this right now. Sorry, podcast listeners, this is not very professional. No, this is great. This is you know, obviously giving him, like you said, Brian, maybe another movie on top of it. Maybe make it to his own kind of mini trilogy within that canon.
Sure,
could be very cool. I think the attention that movie got for the performances, you know, of Javier Bardem and people like that. I think he might be able to draw some interesting actors to the, you know, kind of ancillary roles.
Right.
Outside Mr. Craig.
I'll mention one here in a second, but I felt like Skyfall was definitely the first, you know, in a series of three. You know, it really set up the story, set up the characters. And
sure.
You really didn't get an understanding of who the characters were going to be until the last act or the last scene of the movie, really. So it's going to be interesting to see what Mendes can do with the new characters he's created here, you know, with Naomi Harris and Ben Whishaw and Ralph Fiennes and this Bond franchise is going to get really, really exciting. It's very youthful now. You know, it's not old Q and old M roaming around. You know, it's very youthful and it's very 2013, you know. I haven't heard if Daniel Craig's coming back. I'm assuming he is. But another rumor about this movie that I've seen is Penelope Cruz, rumored to be the next Bond girl. And I actually had to do a double take whenever I heard the news, because I was like, surely she's been a Bond girl already. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, seems so obvious. So Brian, thoughts on Penelope Cruz possibly entering the Bond franchise?
You know, this will sound maybe sacrilegious to Bond fans. The Bond girl is probably the least interesting thing about the Bond movies to me. Like, I really don't care. It's just a pretty girl.
We should preface this by saying that, I mean, Brian is a eunuch. He's not going to have.
Right, exactly.
Eunuch with a child, by the way.
Right. It's yeah, weird. Well, it's a weird thing. No.
Brian, by the way, you're welcome.
That's why his name is Richard. I don't really. None of the Bond girls, I just don't care that much about it, and I really don't care about Penelope Cruz. I don't know that Penelope Cruz has ever been in a movie in which she speaks English that I care about or find her appealing. Right, yeah.
Or whatever that was. Was she in that?
What Vanilla movie? Sky, I guess? I don't know. I mean, it's – so to sum up, I don't really care. I don't know how she could. It's not like I think, man, Penelope Cruz is in this, it's gonna suck.
It's not like she.
But
can
I don't
mess
know
up,
that
yeah.
she's gonna add anything to it in my view either.
Yeah. Well, I agree, man. The Bond girl is just a pair of boobs, really. It's yeah. a distraction for the audience. It's a cliche that has to be there. Can't be any worse than Denise Richards, though, as a scientist,
right.
as a nuclear nuclear physicist.
Yeah, totally believable.
Yeah, it might have been worse. Like, say, Amanda Bynes gets cast. that's the only step down from Denise Richards at this point. Actually, maybe a step up. It could be really interesting. Maybe Amanda Bynes is the villain.
Oh, right.
You know, half shaved head, kind of scary. Scar tissue on her face. That's a topic for another day, though.
It's gonna be the next Joker.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. The only question is
know how
here.
I got my scars?
The only question is here, guys. Is what scenes from The Dark Knight Rises is Sam Mendes going to rip off for this movie?
Yeah, there's not a Christopher Nolan movie for him to base it off of, so that could be a detriment of the franchise.
We're going to expect a woman in tights, you know, and expect Bond to fly a F-16 with a nuclear missile out into the middle of the ocean. We'll see, though. No, I'm saying that all in jest because I love Skyfall. But so we'll have to see on that one. Brian, anything else you want to mention for movie news? I got a couple other things, but
sure.
I wanted to ask you.
I'll bring up one more thing, and it's TV, not movie. But
okay.
And I don't know where you stand on this series, Kent, but I know Richard was a big watcher. This week they officially announced, NBC did, that Dan Harmon is going to be coming back to Community as the showrunner for its fifth season, which will probably be 13 episodes that'll do the same thing as they did this year. Will come out in, you know, February or March, something mid-season like that. And so I wanted to get Richard's thoughts on that and hear. Can't, I don't know if you're a watcher of that show or if you have any opinion on the matter.
Yeah. Go ahead, Richard.
Big fan of the show. Obviously, it has Alison Brie in it, so I have to legally, you know, stay away. But it's a great show. Honestly, this year I thought it was very good, but there was kind of something missing for it this year. Maybe because I'm a big fan of Harmon's writing, I knew he was gone, so maybe I went into it with certain expectations. So I'm actually still like 3 or 4 episodes behind. I didn't finish the season yet, which has never been the case in seasons before. But I'm really excited. I love Dan Harmon. I love his writing style. I think that show is really fun and kind of important as far as carrying that weight after maybe 30 Rock of, you know, kind of that more absurdist, almost sketch driven TV comedy, but also keeping a single narrative. I love Harmon's writing. I think he's kind of crucial. His kind of knowledge of context of pop culture in which to put that show is crucial in my opinion. So I'm excited, and just, you know, bring back Chevy and we're good. Just kidding.
Ugh. Yeah.
You don't like Chevy Chase, Brian?
No, hate Chevy Chase as a person.
Really?
And as a performer. Hate him. Yeah.
Christmas Vacation, Brian? Come on.
Oh dude, he was great.
You're talking about Clark W. Griswold here. Come on.
Hey, great in the early Vacation movies, great in Three Amigos, great in the first season of Saturday Night Live, and his, you know, his early stuff through, I don't know, when did Three Amigos come out? 86, 87, 86, yeah. Pretty much from there on, I could not care less about anything he's ever done, and he's one of the worst human beings in Hollywood, in my opinion. So,
yeah,
that's take that, Chevy.
I loved Christmas Vacation and Vacation. 90% of that had to do with John Hughes being a genius. But I thought the Griswold family was just so funny, and I thought Chevy Chase is great in that. But unlike you, Brian, I haven't seen much of his work, so I can't really hate him. So as far as Community goes, I would say that I am a fan of the series. I wouldn't say that I am caught up. I've seen probably half a dozen to a dozen episodes. I catch probably 2, maybe 3 a season, depending on, you know, I catch the Halloween special and things like that.
Sure.
But the show is so creative and so out of the box that it's just, it reminds me of Arrested Development in a lot of ways, which we'll talk about in next week's podcast. But there's so much going on there that it really takes a fan to know exactly what's going on. I mean, it's similar also in the fact that it's been on the bubble with the network for years.
Yeah.
It actually got canceled for a while and brought back like a year later because the fan outcry was so crazy. But, I mean, it's one that I like. I mean, I like the performers. I think Donald Glover has some good moments. Joel McHale is also – I'm a huge fan of his, obviously. I've mentioned that before on the podcast. But,
Alison Brie.
Alison Brie, of course. I mean, she's an angel, so what else can be said?
Alison Bard.
Yeah. Alison Barden.
I'm excited. That's really good news for that show. I can't believe it got brought back. I'm shocked it got brought back.
Yeah, same here. Well, and that's part of the problem is that they stripped it of its comedic genius for the fourth season. Basically made it clear that there was no way it was going to come out. So or it's going to come back. So everybody just kind of bailed on it and stopped caring. And then they're like, oh, by the way, we're going to do 13 more. And now Harmon's back. I'm interested to see if it's too little too late, if the damage has already been done. Because the fourth season is fine. It's fine. It's just – Richard, you said it quite well. It lacks the heart and the soul that made it such a weird, cool, completely unique sitcom. It very much tried to be a more traditional sitcom and it lost itself in that. So I'm interested to see if with Harmon involved, if it can recover from that, or if fifth season is just going to be one of those that you think, oh gosh, I just wish it would have been canceled and done with, so I didn't have to sit through this anymore.
Yeah. Well, what does NBC have to lose on this? You know, they have no shows.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, and that's why it's back, and which is goes to show. I think we've talked about this before. It goes to show NBC has no idea what they're doing right now, and that they continually fail to maximize the assets that they have in search of bigger and brighter things. But then they're so bad at developing bigger and brighter things that it's been like they've been in a circle or a cycle for 5 or 6 years now of continually trying to replace things that are good but aren't drawing ratings, and they don't know how to advertise. They're always trying to replace them with something that will draw ratings. But the shows that they put in their places are so bad that they don't get ratings. It's this weird cycle that they can't find a way to get out of. And I think Community, Parks and Recreation is it's shocking to me. Parks and Rec is probably my favorite show on television these days. And it's shocking to me that it's been able to stay as good as it has for five seasons now, despite the fact that it's continually caught in this web of you're probably going to get canceled. And then, well, we're going to go ahead and bring you back because Whitney sucked so bad. Who could have seen that coming? And so they're just perpetually spinning their wheels. And I think Community definitely caught the front end of that this year. It wasn't able to gather its legs the way that Parks and Recreation has been able to over and over again over the last couple of years.
Yeah, Brian.
Yeah, it's NBC's put a lot of business executives in charge of their comedy department, and these people are not comedians. They don't really understand what makes funny shows, and so they ruin all the funny pilots they get. With their notes. But Brian, I meant to ask you, because you're kind of with me, you're not a person that's ever watched any CBS shows. Are you prepared to live in a world, because CBS is so behind on the times, right? And they've always had these, you know, while all the other networks with The Office and Arrested Development and Modern Family and all these shows went to the single camera form, CBS, because it's run by, you know, Les Moonves, who's 149 years old, always stayed traditional with the three camera sitcom, the How I Met Your Mother's and the Two and a Half Men and stuff like that. But now, because they're so far behind on the times, every new show they have next year is a single camera. So are we prepared to live in a world where, as single camera fans, we're watching CBS now? Like, that new Robin Williams show is supposedly kind of funny, and like I don't really know what to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to depend on obviously it depends on the content, but in some ways, that would be the greatest thing in the world for us if somehow, because CBS draws ratings no matter what they put on the air. It's not just that they it's not just that they market towards the older audiences that watch TV live and not on DVR. It's that, I don't know, some they've made a deal
they
with
get the ratings. They get the older ratings, like the, you know, the, that's why Tom Selleck's Blue Bloods is still there, you know, because they get to that adult audience is so consistent. Right. That 60 minutes watching audience, you know.
It's so maybe
things
them
that sound better than they are.
Yeah.
Adult audience.
Right. So maybe them putting on a single camera, a set of shows that are single camera is what single camera needs. You know what I mean? Maybe that's how we get to watch a show for 8 or 9 years that is both good and also draws ratings, which has never, it's like never happened since in the last 10 years, it seems like. I don't know. That's an interesting question, Richard, for sure.
Brian, I want to ask you, and you've been kind of researching this pilot season for this coming fall. What does NBC have coming up this fall? We know we have Parks and Rec,
Hannibal,
Revolution, Hannibal. What else?
I don't have it in front of me.
Because they've canceled everything. The Office is gone. 30 Rock is gone. That Matthew Perry show.
Is gone. Yeah. they've got like nothing. They greenlit a bunch of pilots. And it's the same. They did the same thing last year. But here's your Thursday night lineup, okay? So they moved Parks and Recreation to 7, which is terrible. Don't do that. That's the only show you have coming back that should have gone to 8. We should go off the Eastern time slots, but... they should have moved Parks and Recreation to 9 to take over The Office. So Parks and Recreation starts at 8 o'clock. Then you have Welcome to the Family, which I can't remember what that one's about at all. I'm vamping.
Yeah, then we have – you look up what that is. Then we have something called Sean Saves the World.
And that's a Sean Hayes show.
Oh, so goodness.
It'll be off the air by December. There's no question.
Right.
And then they followed then with have... the Michael J. Fox show.
Well, that
which I will watch.
Exactly. I'll watch it no matter what, but who knows if it's going to be if it's going to be good. I hope so. I mean, everybody loves Michael J. Fox, but
We'll see how that goes. Then they close it with Parenthood, which is actually smart on their part, moving that to Thursday, because that's like the only show they have that a lot of people watch. That's actually really smart, because that's just been stuck on like, what, Sunday nights forever? Yeah.
I can't even remember. I watched the first like 2 seasons of Parenthood and then fell off of it. But it is a good show. But it also is another one that suffers from the NBC syndrome, where it's been rumored to be canceled like 3 times. And so you lose. You know, last season was supposed to be its last season. In fact, and I think they ran like 20 of the 23 episodes straight, like to start the year. So they were trying to run them off and then replace it with something else. But guess what? Nothing else worked. And so I am really excited for our pilot watching podcast that we'll do this fall, because NBC and CBS especially are going to be so interesting to see what in the world, what we're going to get. Because like you said, Richard, this weird phenomenon where CBS is so far behind, but maybe that's going to make them the channel that we're actually going to want to watch somehow. Is an interesting thing, and then NBC just constantly grasping at straws.
I like picturing like the people at CBS like, hey, have you ever seen this British show The Office? We should remake that. They shoot it like a movie, like a single camera. I didn't know you could even do that. What is it, 2012? Let's go ahead and greenlight something. It's so funny that they are that far behind. But like you said, it's just going to be – it's going to be great for us. It'll be weird watching CBS that when I'm not – the only thing I watch on CBS is football, David Letterman, and CBS Sunday Morning, which I turned you on to, Brian. And that's it. I've never watched a single – yeah, but I'm a Meet the Press guy.
I got to go to Bob Schieffer, guys, TCU.
I understand. Gotta support. I understand, TCU. I got to Meet the Press, though. Oldest television show in history.
That's true.
I'm all about history. It'll be interesting. And then also, obviously, NBC also has the James Spader led The Blacklist, which I'll be there for at least a couple episodes on that. You got to see what that's about.
Right. It seems like maybe ABC's time is to step up right now. You know, I think they've got the Marvel series coming out, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And that seems to have the most buzz going into the fall as far as a built-in audience already. So that seems like it's the show to beat right now. And they just renewed the Tim Allen Last Man Standing guys. So
yeah.
So there we go.
I haven't seen
that. Yeah.
I saw an episode of that where Jonathan Taylor Thomas guest starred from Home Improvement.
Okay.
It was actually really funny. Like, they were sitting in Tim Allen's new family, I guess, sitting in their living room, and they knock on the door, and it's his daughter's friend, is Jonathan Taylor Thomas, and he answers the door, and then JTT walks in, and he's like, "Do I know you from somewhere?" Like, you look really familiar to me. And there was this really, like, kind of funny moment, you know? But, I mean, how much more can they, you know, knock on Home Improvement?
Yeah, I know the guy, I worked with the guy, Kevin Hench, who's the head writer on that show. I worked with him when I worked at the Corolla podcast.
Uh-huh.
And he was working there at the time, and he's a super funny guy. So I wish that show well, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, neither have I. Anything else you guys want to mention for movie news?
No,
that's all I got.
Let's get going. Let's get it going.
Let's get it going. Let's move on and let's talk about Now You See Me. Hey, what's up, ma'am, fam? Kent here. And yes, if you're hearing from me, you know it's time to talk about Blue Apron. If you haven't tried out Blue Apron by now, what the heck are you even doing? Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. They deliver fresh meals straight to your door. All the food is fresh, it's sourced from local farms, and there's no wasted ingredients. I've been a Blue Apron subscriber for a long time now, and they have still, to this day, never let me down. There's tons of variety. Some featured upcoming meals include summer vegetable and egg paninis, soy glazed pork and rice cakes, skillet vegetable chili with cheddar drop biscuits, holy crap, and garlic butter shrimp and corn with green bean salad. So take it from me. Try out Blue Apron now. Go to blueapron.com/mad. That's blueapron.com/mad. Get 3 meals on us for free. Nothing goes better with a movie than dinner. So check out Blue Apron, blueapron.com/mad. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Hey, ma'am, fam, question for you. Do you own a small business or are you a boss? Are you looking to hire awesome people, but you just can't find somebody to fill that role? Well, let me tell you about ZipRecruiter.com. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites all with one click. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. Right now, you can post your jobs for free on ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/mad. That's ZipRecruiter.com/mad. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/mad. Thanks to ZipRecruiter for supporting this episode of the Mad About Movies podcast.
Come in close. Because the more you think you see, the easier it'll be to fool you.
All right, Brian Gill. The time has come. It's been a while. I believe it was the Iron Man 3 episode. Don't hold me to that. Where Richard and I had a little rants and raves segment of our own regarding Now You See Me. Richard and I had a chance to go attend an early screening of this film, and we'll give our thoughts on it a little bit later and refresh you on that. But first, Brian Gill, thoughts on Now You See Me.
I'm going to say one thing in not necessarily in defense, but on the positive side. I think that you two and I and movie critics – and wannabe movie critics and the people that see 100 new movies a year, I think that we are probably going to enjoy this movie less, obviously, than the standard audience will. The person that only gets to see
maybe a couple of movies a month or something like that. It's because I will say it is, there are at least moments that are slightly entertaining if you're not aware of
the closing credits.
I'm not saying I enjoyed
that
them.
That walk from the seat to the
concessions.
My popcorn was good.
Right, right.
It was good.
There are spots in the movie that if you're not paying attention to how god awful the script, the story, and the film technique is, you could enjoy this movie. I came home and I was kind of talking about it with my wife, and she kind of said, "Oh, that doesn't sound that bad." And I'm like, "You're probably right if you're not somebody who watches." If you're not like us and you don't watch, I don't know, how many movies a year do you guys see in the theater? I would say I probably see 50 or 75 movies a year.
50 to 75, yeah.
And we have a podcast and we're very good at this, obviously. And so we're geared to think critically about things. And I realize this episode is coming on the heels of our last episode in which I talked about how smart the Fast and the Furious series is. So maybe, maybe I'm just an idiot, but, I feel like that needs to be led off by saying if you don't watch movies from a critical standpoint, if you don't see 75 movies a year in a theater,
go see Fast and Furious 6 twice.
Go see Fast and Furious 6. But I understand at least how you could be, this is going to sound super pretentious and film dirt, but I understand how you could be tricked into being entertained by this movie because it's real fast and flashy and it goes at a really dumb fast level pace. And so if you're not looking for the things that are really, really wrong with this, then you could maybe get away with not seeing them. That said, this might be the worst.
Let's get into it.
Yeah, this might be the worst non-horror script that has ever made it to a theater.
Brian, this script has been online and out since like 2008. It's been like circling around Hollywood for ages, and it just now made it to the theater, and somebody was brave enough to greenlight it.
It
made some money. I mean, it did all right.
Yeah, it did, and the guy
half of the reason though is because it had so many stars in it. It was full of stars. Like, imagine this movie with a bunch of no names.
Right.
Like, what would people be thinking of this movie if it was all new people in it? You know.
Right. Here's what's fascinating to me. Somebody needs to write a book about the convolutedness. Is that a word? I don't know. Of who gets credit for a screenplay, because I'm looking at the guys who wrote this movie, and I'm looking in particular at Ed Solomon's page. Okay, Ed Solomon, to his credit, has Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which is a great '80s movie. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which is an okay early '90s movie, and he has screen story credit on Men in Black. That's solid. But he also is responsible for Imagine That, which is the Eddie Murray movie, which is just horrible. The In-Laws, which is pretty horrible.
Let's make sure it's Eddie Murphy because it does not star former Baltimore Orioles great Eddie Murray. Let's just be sure we correct that.
Although that would probably be a better movie if it was.
Yeah, it couldn't have been worse. He has credit for episodes of Gary Shandling's show, but he's also got Super Mario Brothers movie. God. The In-Laws, Charlie's Angels. I mean, so I want to know which of these he's actually responsible for and which he just like had two lines of input in, because it can't be the same person cannot be responsible for the Gary Shandling show and Now You See Me, because this is a horrific script. There is no part of this movie that makes even an ounce of sense.
Come on.
There's nothing. There's nothing.
I can't wait to get into specifics, but keep talking.
Yeah, well, we should say up front to the listener, we are going to just We're going to go so far into specifics today, and I don't care anything about spoilers because this movie is crap.
I hope I spoil this movie for all of you. I hope I ruin it because you don't need to go see it. I hope you were planning to go see it. You accidentally listen to this podcast, have it spoiled, and go see Fast and Furious 6 again. Yes. That's my wish, because if you're going to see this, don't. And I'm just going to say right now, I'm not saying spoiler alert, but Mark Ruffalo's this magician the whole time. And screw you if you're going to go see it anyway.
It's okay. So let's want to get into specifics with you guys, but the script is appalling. There's nothing that the dialogue is horrific. The sequence of events makes just no sense. There are so many things that happen that you would surely this script started out as like 500 pages long, and then they just cut it down without any any understanding of what made the story cohesive. There's all sorts of things that happen that you think something had to have happened behind the scenes for us to understand this. Right. You just have to jump and you either have to say, wait, why did that happen? Or you just have to say, well, I guess, you have to assume that stuff happened off screen that also doesn't make any sense. I mean, guys, it's just so bad. And the direction, which was Kent's big thing in our mini review in the Iron Man episode, the direction is just, I mean, never direct a movie again. Bad. And the spinning camera is infuriating.
You have to see it for yourself, honestly. Like, yes. I told you about it, Brian, and it's nothing until you see it for yourself, you know? It's that
bad. It's so disorienting.
Like, I was telling my girlfriend, it's like, yeah, it's a movie about magic tricks. She's like, that's kind of cool. I go, it would be, except you can't tell what the hell the magic tricks are because the camera's moving at 74 miles an hour. It's like driving down the freeway while a guy does a card trick on the shoulder and then being like, well, I don't know how he did that. Well, of course you don't know how he did that. You can't see what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the quote-unquote action sequences in this movie, too, they move at such a pace that, you can't tell what's happening. So any of the big reveal, it's like, oh, that was really cool. Well, how do you know it was really cool? Because it might as well have been in the dark. I have no idea what happened. It was just flashing images that you're supposed to ooh and awe over. I really did. I don't know how you pronounce the director's name. He's French, so Louis Leterrier.
Louis Leterrier.
Yeah, Leterrier. Okay, sure. I want to punch him in the face.
Didn't he make the Transporter movies?
Yeah, he did. And
he did the Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton. I thought that was pretty decent, though.
It was, and surely because he was working with Marvel, you know, whoever is the producer on that
Kevin
movie,
Feige.
Kevin Feige was like, yeah, you're not going to do any of this crap. You're not going to spin the camera at 1,000 miles per hour, and you're also not going to shoot all of your all of your close up sequences from the ground. I cannot stand that film technique where the camera is basically at knee level of whoever they're filming. And that is a big player in this show. And it's just, it's infuriating. And so anyway, Now You See Me, on every level is horrible. And, I'm excited to talk about the specific reasons for it being horrible besides the horrific script and the please don't ever direct again direction.
Yeah, let's talk about specifics. Let's talk about the acting first. Brian, I could not stand one performance in this movie. I think Mark Ruffalo's performance probably was the most bearable, if I was to say one, other than the reveal at the end where he was behind the whole thing, which makes absolutely no sense considering the stuff he's saying throughout the whole film. Yes. Like, I'm going to catch these guys. And he's, like, determined, but he's not determined. So, I mean, it's literally
He's four steps ahead.
Yeah, he's four steps ahead of you. I'm going to be four steps ahead of you. Seven steps. I don't know. 80 steps. But every performance is absolutely horrible. Richard, what did you think? You thought Isla Fisher's was the worst, right?
Yeah, she was the worst in it for me. Something about her was just really shrill. Thank God for Arrested Development, because I learned how to love her again, because I've always loved her. So thank God I saw Arrested Development this week and fell for her all over again. But she's got, I don't know, maybe she has a voice that just can't scream, and she screams all her lines. Yeah. And she's like trying to fire the crowd up the whole time. No, the
There's
movie.
There's literally no point in her being in this movie. She contributes literally nothing to this
she
movie.
Really does.
Nothing in the plot whatsoever, except like waving her arms and like being a woman. You know what I mean? It's like nothing. Yeah. It's so
The other thing was, I just have to bring this up because I know Brian's a big fan, as am I. Hey, remember when we were talking about how bad this movie was, Brian? And you go, but Woody Harrelson's in it. And Kent right. goes, he's yeah. in it. He's awful. And you go, no. Well, yeah. let's hear it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. He had maybe the – I will say he was probably responsible for the two or three best lines in the movie, but he also was just so bad at every other stretch. I mean, the script did him no favors either, because one of you guys said he comes across as like a borderline deviant.
Pedophile.
Like,
I said
like some sort of pedophile. And that's so true. Like, this is the grossest character that he's ever played. And he doesn't ever do anything that's
he was a natural born killer.
Yes, I know. It's like James Spader level of creepy, but not good. Like, I mean, he's so bad. I'm going to disagree with you, Kent. I think Mark Ruffalo was the worst part of the movie. I could really? Not stand his character when he was an FBI agent early on. It was just – I felt like I was watching – I felt like I was watching Bruce Banner in like a mid-level range between scientist Bruce Banner and the Hulk. Because, like, everything he said was, like, caveman-esque. Like, he was just grunting. Like, I expected him to rip his shirt off and just – I mean, it was – like, when he's banging around in the plane when somebody's clearly – I guess is kicking his seat or something. And he just, like – he's, like, hitting the seat, turning around and staring at that. It was so bad. And everything – every time he was on screen, I was just, like, I'm going to – I first of all, I'm not a Mark Ruffalo fan. I think maybe Avengers was the first thing that he's done in like 10 years that I didn't really dislike. So this just brought me right back to where I was before Avengers of, man, I don't like you. I don't find you charismatic. And him, the stuff that he was doing was just so bad. And then when it flips and you find out, well – you could probably see that coming from about 17 miles away, but whatever. The flip, you know, once he starts revealing his true nature, it's like, oh my God, it's even worse. He's even worse. I couldn't stand his character. All of them were bad. All of them. Jesse Eisenberg, I'm going to give him a slight pass in that it seemed clear to me that he knew this is a piece of crap and I'm not even going to try. And so not that – I don't know. He's terrible. He's so bad in this movie. But maybe he was smart enough to realize this is awful, and I'm not even gonna put my effort into this. Whereas Isla Fisher is clearly trying, and Dave Franco too. Who I like, Dave Franco. He's my favorite of the Franco brothers. But man, he's so bad in this movie. And he and Isla Fisher are trying so hard to be compelling characters, and they're not at all. And oh man, all the performances.
I want to mention the airplane scene that you just mentioned. Woody Harrelson, like the scene starts out and they just show the four horsemen on the airplane. And then Woody Harrelson like does something, like he comes out of the bathroom or something. He's like, sorry, I was masturbating. Like, you know, like something so perverted and just like out of nowhere, not even funny. I agree with you, Jesse Eisenberg. What is going on with him, man? Like, his career,
it's not going well. I mean, that's for sure.
It's not going well, but let's talk about Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine. Now, Brian, I know you're a fan of both of their work. We've talked about them numerous times before in the show. Why on earth did they agree to do this?
Morgan Freeman is a guy who I talked about Bruce Willis at some point in the past on our podcast, and of how Bruce Willis is a guy that knows that there's nothing that he can do that can ruin his career, so he can take any movie
that comes his way, because nothing's ever going to sully his image. I think Morgan Freeman is kind of in that same boat, despite the fact that those two are obviously so much different in the type of movies that they do. But Morgan Freeman does this from time to time where he just shows up in these really crappy, low-rent action or kind of really sappy drama movies that are really – no one cares about, because it's never going to affect him. For some reason, he is just unflappable. It's not it never comes back to bite him in the butt. And Michael Caine is on record as saying that he'll basically take any movie that comes his way, that sometimes you just have to take a paycheck, and that's all that it is. I will say at least Morgan Freeman's character has a point to be in this movie. You know, he plays a fairly significant role in the turn of events. Michael Caine could have been played by my grandfather. Like, there's absolutely no point for I'd love to know how much he got paid to be in this movie, because they could have paid a scale actor to play his same role and it wouldn't have made any difference whatsoever. He literally, you
comment
know,
on his ridiculous costume, by the way. The first scene they show him in, he's in like a top hat. Yeah. What is he wearing? Like a
I don't even
He looks
know.
Like a Jimi Hendrix costume or something.
It's so dumb. It's just so dumb. There are so many things in this movie. I'm sure we've said it before, but maybe the best mark of a great script and of a great movie is that no scene and no line is wasted. And this is like – this movie's like 70% wasted lines and wasted scenes that have no bearing on anything that's happening in the movie. There are so many – dude, guys, are you guys familiar with
guys?
Yeah,
mention her.
Familiar with the tone, with the term MacGuffin and what that stands for in the movies? Okay,
yes.
This entire script is a MacGuffin. Like everything that happens is a MacGuffin. Everything that happens in the movie makes no sense except in the context of that line or that scene in the movie to drive that particular scene. My favorite thing in the whole movie, and I mean favorite in the worst sense possible, is when random FBI agent, he literally says, and you guys talked about this before, but he literally says, hey, you remember how Jesse Eisenberg's character is a big control freak and he makes all of the other magicians wear tracking bracelets? Well, we got the tracking signal. And it's just,
yeah,
you're just supposed to believe that because he's a control freak, he makes his other magicians wear tracking bracelets for literally no reason. There is no reason why they should be wearing tracking. Yeah. They are literally, guys, literally all on the same stage. They're within 20 feet of each other the entire time. So what is the purpose of them wearing tracking bracelets? I mean, and it's stuff like that just happens.
I'm more bummed that that E-Track didn't get that product placement, because I was hoping for a MacGruber. This would be an excellent commercial for their product.
Right.
Like in MacGruber. But
you guys, let's be honest, Richard. You guys would have gotten no business after
yeah, you might be thinking right now if you were in this movie. No, it doesn't – none of it makes any sense. It jumps from place to place. There's never any intelligent reveal on any of them. I guess the first trick that they do gets a reveal, but the second one, it's just, oh, well, we stole your password because we knew your mother's maiden name. Are you freaking kidding me? This guy's worth $140 billion or $140 million, and he has the same password protection for his bank accounts that I do. I mean, come on. It's idiocy. And the third
he uses chase.com. Yeah.
Yeah,
for his $140 million.
So, hey, Brian, just randomly, like, what's your mother's maiden name?
But the third bit that they do, where they jump off the roof, there's never any reveal for how they accomplish that. And also, why does Mark Ruffalo's character fire a gun at them? I don't know. I mean, it doesn't. It's just so stupid. It's so stupid. And I think maybe the worst thing about it is that I felt like the movie wanted me as a critic to pinpoint all the things that are wrong with it and then tell me that I'm wrong for picking out the things that are wrong with it. Does that make any sense? You guys feel that way? Like it felt like it was very smug in its approach to the whole thing of, you know, yeah, well, if you're not, if you're picking this apart, then you just don't get it, man. You know, that's how I felt. Like, you just don't get that this is entertainment. No, it's not entertainment. It's a piece of crap. It's awful. And I can't believe that I just can't believe that this even got made. The whole premise that magicians are somehow cool and awesome is insane to begin with. Like, the whole thing is based on a fallacy that there are millions of people in this world, billions even, who are just so enthralled by magicians. No one who's not in Vegas right now at a David Copperfield show gives a crap about magicians. Are the whole thing is magic is stupid, and I don't know.
You know what's the most frustrating is that fact that they went to David Copperfield and David Blaine and all these people as consultants, but there's not one magic trick in the movie.
No, not one.
No. There's not one like, oh, that was cool. You know, like you would see David Copperfield do a trick. There's a card trick at the very beginning that Jesse Eisenberg does, and that's it.
Right.
And then from then on, all they're doing is stealing money from bank accounts. That's the magic trick. There's no magic in it at all. Do you know what I mean? Like, name one magic trick they do.
No, there aren't any. Everything they do is CGI tricks or bank heists. And Dave Franco picking a lock every once in a while. I mean, it's just stupid.
What's most frustrating that I mentioned in our mini review was the fact that the audience loved this movie. So Brian, tell us how the audience in your screening reacted to Now You See Me.
I had a much better audience than you guys did. There were a few people that were laughing and stuff, and at one point, I think it wasn't the first bit, but it wasn't the end either. I think it was the New Orleans thing where they robbed from Michael Caine. I could distinctly tell that it was two people started clapping when the reveal came through, which is a pet peeve of mine. Like, stop clapping in a movie. That's we don't need this anymore. But
yeah.
They started clapping, and somebody else from the other side of the theater goes, "Shut up!" So, I felt like the audience was much more in tune with my thinking. There were very few laughs at the moments when clearly this movie was desperately begging you to laugh, even though it wasn't funny at all. So it did restore my faith in humanity just a little bit. That nobody else really cared and was buying into the garbage that they were trying to sell us. So that definitely helped my opinion of the movie, because there's nothing worse than watching a piece of crap unfold on the screen and having everybody else around you die laughing. Like, it's just, I can't stand that. So I had it better than y'all.
Richard, what's going through your mind? I know you got a lot to say.
You know, I was texting my friend Brandon after I saw Django. And we were talking, and I said, you know, the best thing I could say about this movie is I can't get it out of my head. I can't stop thinking about all the moments that made this movie great. I've even liked some movies more than I like Django, but Django really stuck with me as far as, like, what the cool moments in Django. I couldn't stop thinking about them.
Sure.
This movie's kind of the inverse of that, in that I think about it all the time still, but just about all the stuff that was so bad about it. When we left the theater, I said, you know what? I'll probably watch that movie a ton more times on cable just because it's so bad. And you very hilariously said, I never want to see that movie again. And I agree with you at the time, but I'm kind of have to go with my original statement where I can't wait to watch this like 8 more times.
I kind of agree with you, Richard. I want to see it again and just make fun of it. Have it on mute and just make up lines.
Well, it needs to be Mystery Science Theater. It's so bad. I mean, it's that level of a at least from a script and a filmmaking standpoint. It's almost a B movie. It is that bad. I mean,
yeah.
It's a B movie with a butt.
It's a movie like Django Unchained, which is our first episode on this podcast. It's a movie for movie lovers. Do you know what I mean? It's everything that you could want in a movie. It gives you everything. It's entertaining. It's funny. This movie, to me, and I've just thought about this in the past few days, this movie is almost as if it's for people who have never seen a movie before. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you've never seen a movie before? Well, here, see, now you see me, and then now you can see all the rest of the movies that are out there. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it treats the audience like they're so stupid.
Well, and that's that. I think that's what that plays into what I said at the outset of this episode, is it is made for people who don't get to go to see movies very often, which frustrates me, because I feel, you know, when I write a review, my whole point is, I've always written to that person, you know, to the person that only gets to go out once or twice a week or once or twice a month to see a movie, to tell them, go see this movie, don't go see this movie. This is the exact type of movie that I try desperately when I write a review to tell people, do not see this movie, because it's such cheap, crappy entertainment, but it will try to bait you into feeling like, just what you said, kid, just exactly like you said, like if you've never seen a movie before, like, this is a good movie. And it's not. It's, from every technical standpoint, this is a garbage movie. It's total garbage. And it makes me, honestly, it makes me hate it more because of that, because it is slightly entertaining, just enough to pass that, the lowest level of audience approval. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I totally agree. Go ahead, Richard.
And unlike Fast and the Furious, which succeeds because it's self-aware,
right?
This movie's not self-aware at all. It doesn't get that it's bad. It tries really hard to be like Inception or something that's really trippy.
Yeah.
And
It's not. It reminded me a lot of have you
Citizen
ever seen
Kane?
The movie?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. The movie Jumper. With Hayden Christensen from like 2008, I think.
Yeah.
It had a lot of similarities to me, and that movie is just horrible too. So, way to go, guys. You've put it in great company. You're in the same class as Jumper. Man.
Why was Hayden Christensen not in this? That's my real question. This is a perfect vehicle for him.
That's a great question.
Wasn't a big enough star. I mean, this is a movie for stars, guys.
Yeah. The budget was like $75 million. Jeez.
They'll make it back. They totally will.
They've already made like 35 or 40. So, I mean, it's going to make money, but man, it should end some careers, honestly.
Movies like the Ocean series, which we've mentioned on the show, they're grounded in reality. Is what makes it great. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, this stuff could be happening right now and nobody would know it. You know what I mean? These type of capers and things. Now You See Me could have stuck to that mentality. Yes. And it might have succeeded at doing that. But they take this movie to a supernatural place.
Yes.
That
yes.
is absolutely... it ruins everything. Like the new, like the scene in New Orleans when they're... stealing from Michael Caine. They're stealing money from him by pointing a flashlight at a card and then numbers appear on the card?
Yeah.
That's how they do it? Do you know what I mean? It's like... I won't even mention the end. I just want to hear your thoughts about that.
Oh, but, the reveal?
No, talk to me about the flashlight caper. That was just some of the work. And the people are standing up. Oh, my bank account says 10,000. Oh, mine is 40,000. It's just the worst thing. It's so just, cheesy.
It's so cheesy, so poorly written. And then it's like they did Isla
Fisher
like
floats
everything
in that
in the movie.
Bubble.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. What is that? It's like they did everything in the movie on one take. And we're like, yeah, that's good. We're not going to try to make that any better. That'll work. Honestly, this is how I felt coming out. It made me want to see the Incredible Burt Wonderstone, which I totally thought looked like total crap when it was out in March. And was like, I don't want anything to do with that movie. And was just like, I'll just wait for Now You See Me. Because we didn't know how bad that was going to be at the time, obviously. And it was like, well, there's two magic movies coming out in 2 month span. So I'll just wait for that one. It made me want to watch, The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, just hoping that it's got to be better than this. It's got to be.
Yeah. There's no way it's worse.
No.
And why is Hollywood thinking we want to watch movies about magicians?
I don't know. That's the premise of the movie is
because guys, Chris Angel is pretty awesome.
Ugh.
He's my idol.
I ran security for him. He showed me how he does all his tricks.
Nice.
Oh man.
That was the best part of our experience seeing it was meeting that guy.
Yeah.
So is this the worst movie you guys have seen this year?
Yes. No, I'd put a movie called The Internship up there too. Maybe we'll talk about. Maybe we won't. But I wanted to mention the end, the supernatural ending. So movie starts out with the four horsemen getting these cards, right? These playing cards, which attract them to an apartment, and then the floor fills with liquid, and then we don't know what happens after that.
Right.
But so at the end, they all meet up, and they put their cards together.
Right.
And the CGI takes over, and the cards like float in midair and then come together to form this like shape. I don't even remember.
It's an eye.
That's sweet. And then like a carousel comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And
best part of the whole movie, Mark Ruffalo reveals who he is. And then he's standing next to the carousel that's already spinning, and he just kind of nonchalantly hops onto a carousel and kind of rides away. And they're all amazed that he's able to hop onto a moving carousel. Like, they all just have these looks of shock and awe on their faces that, oh, man, that guy knows how to jump onto a moving carousel. He's up to, like, fifth grade level of ability to walk. That's awesome. I mean,
yeah, you guys just robbed 30 banks because of this guy's help.
Yeah,
and escaped, literally turned into money when you escaped.
Yeah,
and you're impressed that he can hop on a moving carousel.
Hi. I mean,
Brian, talk to me about Melanie Laurent from Inglourious Basterds, man.
I love Melanie Laurent.
Academy Award movie.
Yeah, she's tremendous, and you know. She was my favorite part of this movie.
Yeah,
her part in the movie is fine. It's just that, like almost every other character in this movie, there's no reason for her even to be there. She literally serves no purpose. Just like Isla Fisher, just like Michael Caine, pretty much just like Dave Franco. I mean, this really could have just been Jesse Eisenberg and Woody Harrelson. There's really no reason for any of the, and I guess Mark Ruffalo. There's no reason for any of the rest of these people to be in. Anyway, she was fine in what she's doing, but yeah, right.
And midway through, they hint at her being involved with the Four Horsemen, and I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Hopefully that was what happened. And the rest of the movie is Mark Ruffalo trying to figure it out. But then they just dismiss it immediately. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then she's pointless. It was just for a love interest. And the movie ends, literally the last scene of the movie is Mark Ruffalo and her, like, kissing.
Yes.
Why would the audience care what Mark Ruffalo is up to after?
Exactly. No, there's no reason for you to care whatsoever about his character, whether revealed or not revealed. You don't care. There's no reason to get into that. And why in the world it should end on their, like, it's like, it was like the movie wanted us to feel towards Melanie Laurent and Mark Ruffalo the way we felt towards like Jim and Pam on The Office or Ross and Rachel on Friends. Yeah. Like, oh, finally they got together. No, I don't give a crap. It's so bad.
I'm pissed at her. She could do way better.
Yeah, yeah. His character's basically a caveman. You should probably do better than that.
That cool black guy you were with in Inglourious Basterds. That guy was.
Yeah, yeah. Hey guys,
stay with that guy.
Remember when Common was in this movie for?
Yes, we talked about that. That's the funniest one to me, because that part is literally like he's not a four horseman. They don't heist him. They literally just paid for Common, to do that symphony thing. Such a cheap and easy conceit.
Yes.
Narrative wise, to have a character that can just hypnotize people and whatever. So like, there's never any threat because like. let's say the Four Horsemen did get caught and all these people did draw their gun, Mark Ruffalo and co. Couldn't Woody Harrelson just go and they would all start playing Symphony and they could just walk away? Like, if you have a guy with that power, why are you running? Because that guy can just – he's pretty much a demigod at that point because his you know, hypnotic skills are better than, you know, Jennifer Lopez is behind or something. I don't know. It's just like – that was a really weird late early 2000s reference. But I don't know why I went there. I'm tired.
Because but discussing this anyway,
Jenny from the blog.
But I don't – yeah, it's so – and yes, and then you literally can pay any actor any amount of money. It's a two-line part. It's, you know, it's just this random police chief on the FBI task force. Could be played by anybody that's played a corpse on Law & Order. Doesn't matter. And you're like, nah, let's play $3 or $4 million and get Common. Why?
Exactly.
Great for Common.
I think that's just a good word to describe this movie. Why?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Seriously.
Stupid. Yeah, stupid.
And it did beat After Earth. Let's talk about that. It's After Earth flopped, and Now You See Me made more money than that. So Jesse Eisenberg apparently has more box office pull than Will Smith now. So it's crazy.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk After Earth whenever we get a chance to do that full on, because it's, man, there's a lot of stuff that we need to discuss. But
okay, go ahead. Sorry, Richard.
We'll go on. Because I saw After Earth today, it's much better than Now You See Me.
Yes, I totally agree, and it's not a good movie, so that should tell you how bad.
We'll spoil that, but yeah,
right.
It's a much better movie than Now You See Me.
That's actually good to hear. I actually do kind of want to see After Earth just because I'm curious, and I will. But Brian Gill, let me ask you this: grade for Now You See Me.
I try to reserve my F grades for movies like movie 43 that I couldn't even finish and things like that. So I will give it a D.
Okay. Richard Barton, grade for Now You See Me.
A D.
D.
I mean, I'd be really pissed. Brian's a trooper for paying for it. A D minus, probably. D minus.
I'll go D too. Throw some D's on that. So that's our grade. Now You See Me is D.
Yeah. Don't see it. Please don't see it. I mean,
D wait for don't. It to
be on,
yeah.
It's totally going to be on TBS like 17 times in a weekend. So just wait for it then so you can just make fun of it. But don't give it your money. Please don't give it your money. It's so bad. It's just so bad.
If you really want to see it, all we ask that you buy a ticket for Fast and Furious 6 and then go watch Now You See Me.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Or like a little independent movie, like buy a ticket for Mud and then go see Now You See Me or something. Like give your money to the right people. This is not, we don't need them to get any more money.
Yeah. So I guess that about wraps it up for Now You See Me. I'm sure we'll bring it up again because it's already become a classic movie to talk about here on the Mad About Movies podcast.
Oh, man.
And I'm sure we'll have a lot more stuff to say in the future. But for now, let's move on to Weekly Recommend, shall we?
Sure.
Brian Gill, Weekly Recommend.
Yeah, a movie came out today, actually, on DVD and Blu-ray. That was the first movie I saw this year that I actually really liked. And so I think I talked about it just a little bit before, but I want to recommend the movie Warm Bodies. It's definitely worth picking up as a rental or online or whatever you're going to do. It's very, very fun, pretty smart. Doesn't take itself too seriously, and has some great scenes, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. So check out Warm Bodies.
Great. Richard Barden, Weekly Recommend.
Yeah, I had the girlfriend watch the movie a couple weeks ago, and she said, you really need to watch this. I think you'll really dig it. And that movie was Now You See Me. No. It was,
and now we're broken up.
Yeah, no, I murdered her.
No, the movie was a little movie. Well, it's kind of a little indie movie, but with a pretty great cast. Called Friends with Kids. Have either of you seen Friends with Kids?
I have.
Is it, Paul Rudd? Maybe.
No, it's John Hamm. And John Hamm and John Hamm's longtime girlfriend in real life wrote and directed it, and also stars in it. Adam Scott, Kristen Wiig.
Adam Scott, that's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Adam Scott, Kristen Wiig, Megan Fox, Edward Burns, Eddie Burns in it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Maya Rudolph. Yep.
Oh yeah, Maya Rudolph as well. Sorry, pardon me. Really kind of a very original movie. Some cringeworthy parts, some really funny, interesting parts. Overall, I'm really glad I saw it. Really liked it. I find this is weird. Megan Fox is beautiful. Like, is like more beautiful now than she ever, like, since she had that kid. She's gotten more attractive to me. She's not like a trashy teenager anymore. She actually looks like a woman. I was kind of transfixed by her in this movie.
She's one of the few good things about This Is 40. I'll say.
And she looks great in that too. And the funniest thing about This Is 40 is the whole thing is like she's the hot one because, you know, she hasn't had to have kids. And Megan Fox, it was like 2 months off having a kid when she did This Is 40. So that's right, impressive. Right. But she's really good in this. And her career has kind of taken a random upswing the last year. So
she's doing
her,
Ninja Turtles next. Michael Bay. She's April O'Neil. So
good. Great. So much for that. But she had a good run. 2012 was nice to her at least. Yeah, Adam Scott's great in this. I really liked this is Brian will understand because of our love for. So, like, you know, no woman's good enough for John Hamm. I mean, he's a god. Right. And so I would always see them together, and I always put myself in it. I was like, if I was John Hamm, I would be just Clooney in it every night. I mean, what is this guy doing? He's had the same girlfriend for, like, you know, 15 years, and she's pretty, but I mean, come on, it's John Hamm. I mean, look at this guy. But she was really charming and I think a real talent in this movie. And her acting's great, and Adam Scott and her have wonderful chemistry, and just a cool, interesting little twist on kind of a romantic comedy that I liked. So, Friends with Kids.
Sweet. I'm over here in London taking a film class, and we have been watching two movies. One of which I'll mention right now for Weekly Recommends. It is directed by the late, great Stanley Kubrick. It is came out in 1964, and it is called Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
It stars
Peter Sellers in three amazing roles, and George C. Scott, who's always great. But man, Peter Sellers, I've been studying him in depth these past few weeks, and what a brilliant, brilliant mind and actor this guy was.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
If you haven't seen Dr. Strangelove, I mean, Kubrick is, everyone knows, maybe the best director ever to live. But pair him up with, Peter Sellers, and it's just gold. I mean, you can't take your eyes off it. You know what I mean? It's his cinematography and direction plus Peter Sellers is just so great. Richard, you seen this movie?
Yeah, one of my favorite movies of all time. It's my favorite Kubrick movie. As the resident comedy nerd of this podcast, I mean, I'm a Peter Sellers nut. Went through a big Peter Sellers phase in either late high school, early college, somewhere in there. I highly recommend Kent as sort of an accoutrement to that movie. Jeffrey Rush played Peter Sellers.
Yeah, we watched that today. Yeah.
Okay, great. Cool little HBO biopic.
Stanley Tucci as Stanley Kubrick. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and kind of a cool, you know, HBO does these little kind of cheapy biopics. Like they just did the Liberace one with kind of a star-studded cast. So they're not really like full theatrical, you know, Walk the Line or Ray, but they're cool little, and I thought Jeffrey Rush was brilliant as Sellers in that. That's great. And Dr. Strangelove is, Slim Pickens is in it. I mean, you can't beat some Slim Pickens. It's still a wonderful movie.
Yeah. I hadn't seen Dr. Strangelove since, until I came over here, and man, it might be one of my new favorite movies ever. It's just, I can't stop thinking about it.
Funny.
It's just so brilliant. So funny. In every sense of the word. So great script. Would recommend. Wonderful script. Amazing, amazing script. And great story behind that. The studio actually wouldn't let Kubrick make another movie unless Peter Sellers was in it. So the studio actually wanted Sellers to play 5 roles. He originally agreed to play 4, but he couldn't do a Texas accent, so he played 3 roles. So a little bit of trivia there for you. But yeah, great, great, great movie, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, directed by Stanley Kubrick. Brian Gill, let me ask you this. Where can I find your work online?
You can find me on Twitter at bgill12 or on my website, canbabiesdrinkredbull.com.
Richard Barden.
You can find me at Richard Barden on Twitter or at richardbarden.com. Kent, where might I find you online?
Find me on Twitter at Kent Garrison. Find the podcast online. I'll mention it again, madaboutmoviespodcast.com. You can contact the show on there and find all our episodes. So do it. Do it, do it, do it.
And go on iTunes, rate us, give us 5 stars. We like that. Leave a comment, and we will pick our favorite comment to read next week live on the air on our podcast, our favorite ones. Put something funny on there. So let's end the show. Thank you for listening to Mad About Movies, and we will see you at the cinema.
Goodbye.
See ya.